Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin seven lines from the top of Daf Yud Gimel. We pointed out at the end of our previous shiur that, unfortunately, due to the constrictions of the Daf Yomi format, we had to stop where we did. However, it should be noted, as we emphasized in our last shiur, that we stopped in the middle of a discussion. For a lengthier introduction to today's shiur, by all means listen to the end of our previous shiur. But as a brief recap, we were discussing the source that Tavua and Zesim are established as to what type of miser you are going to tithe, whether it's a miser sheni year or it's a miser oni year. It depends on when the tavua developed a third. If it developed a third before Rosh Hashanah, so it will be tithed according to the previous year. If it developed a third after Rosh Hashanah, so it will be tithed according to the present year. So the Gemara was dealing with the criterion of one third developed in order to establish what year the tavua, the grains and olives, are associated with. Our Gemara presented its first source for that, and that was Rav Asi at the lower part of Daf Yud Beis Omid Beis, where we have a Roman numeral 1 placed. And where we left off was Rav Asi explaining to Rabbi Zeira that the Rabbonin know that Tavua that's harvested at Sukkis definitely developed a third before Rosh Hashanah. So the pasuk that was cited, three lines from the top of Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, V'chag Ha'osif B'tzeis Hashanah, was explained to mean that at Sukkot's time, Osif meant harvested, even though that's not the translation of the word, but that's how the Gemara explained it, that's how Rav Asi explained things, that at Sukkot's time, when you harvest the grains, they go according to B'tzeis Hashanah, according to the year that just passed. Sukkot being the second week of Tishrei, the grain will be established as to what it was in the previous year. So if the previous year was a Miser Sheni year, even though you're harvesting the grain in the third year of the sabbatical cycle, nevertheless, you will treat it as if it's from the second year. And that applies to every year and how you analyze it. The main point for our, let's say, our jump-off now for the Gemara is that Rav Asi answered Rabbi Zeira, and Rabbi Zeira accepted this answer, that King Luhu Rabbonan, the Rabbonan know, they know natural phenomenon, and they know that Tavua, that grains that are harvested or harvestable at Sukkis, they had developed a third prior to Rosh Hashanah, and the Pasuk instructs us to treat it B'tzeis Hashanah as according to the previous year. So from that we see that grain development is based on its developing one third. That establishes when it developed the third. It is according to that time that the grain is treated accordingly, as either Miser Sheni or Miser Oni. The point at which we begin today's shiur is a bracketed section. And we explained in our previous shiur that the reason for the brackets is that immediately after the brackets, Rabbi Chanina poses a question directly to Rav Asi. Rav Asi, who had explained that in the Pasuk, third line from the top, V'chag ha'osif, but say Sashana, the word osif was an extra word, because in the same Pasuk you saw the word be'os becha, so it couldn't mean the holiday of at the time of ingathering, therefore Rav Asi said it meant something else. Rabbi Chanina, after the brackets, will ask, how can you say that? And he will attack the source that Rav Asi had given, and that will lead the Gemara to seek out a new source, which it does, second line from the bottom. In the meantime, though, we have a brackets, a long section in brackets, and we have a note that accompanies this. You can see on the side, Sograyim L'shem Gidiluk. These are brackets for initial skipping, which we just demonstrated. Kedei Litzor Retzef, to create continuity, Bein Shuvas Rav Asi Kan, between Rav Asi's answer that we had just here in the Gemara, that we learned in greater depth when we learned in our previous year, Lekushya Sherebi Chanino Makshalov, to connect this point with the question that Rav Chanina raises on him acharem, after the brackets. Besoicham, within the brackets, muva oid masu maton, there's another discussion. Sheboi Rabbi Yirmiyo makshe kushya l'Rabbi Zera al hatshuva shehu kibel dekim lehu l'rabbona. Rabbi Yirmiyo will be seen where the triangle is facing upwards. He will be questioning Rabbi Zera's acceptance of Rav Asi's answer that kim lehu l'rabbona, the Rabbonan just happen to know. The Rabbana know natural phenomena. They have knowledge of nature. Behemshech keta besograyim, within this bracketed section, roin litzayin, it's worth pointing out, the Rabbi Yirmiya atzmoi chozer bo, you'll see an inverted triangle later where Rabbi Yirmiya actually reverses himself, umekabil haklal dekim l'rabbonan, he actually accepts this principle that the rabbonan know natural phenomenon, umenaseh lehochiach kach, and he will try to prove that, aval ha'chocho sheloi, but ironically the ha'chocho, the proof that he tries to bring, ha'chocho shelo atzmo nivche basof, is actually rejected. So we have a very unusual situation here where Rabbi Yirmiya initially goes on the attack against the principle of kim luhu l'rabbonan, that the Rabbonan just happened to know. Then there's a turnaround and Rabbi Yirmiya accepts it, but at the end of the discussion, the Gemara is going to then bring into question Rabbi Yirmiya's proof of accepting that klal. So it's almost as if we're going back to Rabbi Yirmiya's initial skepticism. That, of course, will become much clearer as we go through the Gemara. So now that, hopefully, things are pretty clear, namely, Rav Asi, most recently, right at the end of our previous year, the point that we left off with, he gave an answer, an explanation for how one is to know that the standard in judging grains as to what year they are associated with, a Meiser Sheni year or a Meiser Oni year, years of the 7-year sabbatical cycle, years 1, 2, 4, and 5 are Meiser Sheni years, years 3 and 6 are Meiser Oni years. So that was established at when the grain develops a third, and the Gemara after the brackets, Rabbi Chanina will be attacking or questioning Rabbi Zera's, Rabbi Rav Asi's proof. Now the bracketed section. Omer le Rabbi Yirmiya le Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Yirmiya addresses Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera is the one that accepted Rav Asi's answer that the Rabbonon know natural phenomenon, and part of that knowledge included that grains that are harvestable at Sukkot time definitely grew a third prior to Rosh Hashanah 2 weeks earlier. So Rabbi Yirmiyah asks Rabbi Zeira, "Vakim luhu l'rabbanan bein shlish l'pachos mishlish?" The rabbanan really know the difference between one third developed and less than one third developed? Who says that in the 2 weeks the grain went from being one third developed to 100% ready? Maybe it was not one third developed. Maybe it was a quarter developed. How are you so sure that? How can we say with such certainty that the standard is one third? And that had been based on what? Based on the idea that the Rabbanan just happened to know. Omar Lei, Sir Rabbi Zeira responds, and you'll note that there's a very long response that we have in this Gemara. Rabbi Zeira responds by insisting on that, yes, Kimlu Rabbanan. And as part of this long response, we'll see that Rabbi Yirmiyah himself turns around to accept this approach. So, Omar Lei, Rabbi Zeira says back to Rabbi Yirmiyah, the markings, these volcano shapes, are a continuation of the marking scheme that we started in our previous year, where the narrow part facing up is a question and the inverted volcano is a response. So Rabbi Zeira says back to Rabbi Yirmiyah, Lav aminoloch, didn't I tell you, lo tapik nafshoch, labar mehilchisa, not to take yourself out of the realm of halacha, which in really means is, didn't I once tell you not to question the chachomim and their establishment of quantities and times and measures? Kol midos chachomim kein hu, all shiurim given by the chachomim, all dimensions, all measures presented by the chachomim are in exact terms, so that when questions arise, there is an awareness and a sensitivity to exactness. But he goes through three examples where the halacha, where there's a line that's drawn. On one side, it's something is acceptable; on the other side, it's not acceptable, and it's a fine line. Barboim saw who tovel. A mikveh containing this measure of water, 40 saw, is tovel, is suitable for immersion, and will purify. Barboim saw chaser kurtov eno yocholid bol bohen. If the mikveh is 40 saw minus a kurtov is a very small measure, he cannot immerse in them, in the waters. A second example, kebetza metama tumas ochlin. An egg quantity of food, if it becomes defiled, it can transmit the defilement to something else. Kebetza chaser shumshum eino metama tumas ochlin. If you have food quantity that's almost an egg in quantity, it's an egg minus a sesame seed. If everyone knows, a sesame seed, a very small quantity. So if the egg is the size of, if the food in question that became tomei is almost an egg in quantity, but an egg minus a sesame seed, a quantity of food, all these are quantities. Eggs and sesames are used here as quantities. A quantity of food that's just a little bit less than an egg in quantity will not transmit tuma onwards. And another example of exactness, shloisha al shloisha mitame medras. If you have, let us say, a piece of fabric that measures 3 by 3 hand breadths, it is subject to receiving tumas medras. Tumas medras is a type of tuma where certain individuals who are already tome, like a zav or a zova or a nida, if they sit on a chair, for example, or a bed, the chair and bed will become an av hatuma. The chair and bed are capable of transmitting tuma even to people. Likewise, a piece of fabric that measures 3 by 3 hand breadths is subject to tumas medras. And that would make the piece of fabric very tome, to the extent that if it comes into contact with a person, it could be miktama, it could defile a person, which is an example of something that's a very high level of tuma intensity. However, shloisha shloisha choser nimo achas, if you have a piece of fabric that measures 3 by 3 hand breadths minus a thread, eino mitame medras, it won't be capable of absorbing that type of tuma if a zav would sit on it. So Rabbi Zeira is making a point loud and clear that the Chachomim are sensitive, are aware of exactness in quantity. And the Rabbonin, if they say that grains develop a third, that grains that are harvested at Sukkot time have developed a third prior to Rosh Hashanah 2 weeks earlier, you can rely on their statement. Hodar Omar Reb Yirmiyah. Now we have the inverted triangle indicating the opposite approach taken by Reb Yirmiyah, whereas before he voiced his skepticism about Kim Luhu L'Rabbonin, that the Rabbonin know. Here he reverses. Hodar Omar Reb Yirmiyah. Then Reb Yirmiyah says, Lav Milsohi Di Amri, that which I said is not to be reckoned with. And why? The Bo'u Minei Chavrayo Meirav Kahana. The friends, the colleagues, they asked of Rav Kahana, Omer Shekrivu Yisrael B'Knisosan L'Oretz. The Omer is a grain offering, it's a barley offering, that is offered on the 16th of Nisan, and it enables the population to start benefiting from this year's new grains, the grains that developed over the winter. That's an Omer offering. The Omer offering, by the issue of new grains and old grains, becomes an active concern when it comes to the grains growing in Eretz Yisrael as they now entered Eretz Yisrael. We're talking about the Omer that they offered B'Knisasan L'Oretz, upon their entrance to the land. And we should point out, historically, they entered the land of Israel on the 10th of Nisan. Meheichon hikrivuhu. From where did they find grains suitable for this meal offering that they at that time brought in the Mishkan? Im tomar da'ayel biad nochri, if you say that they used grains that grew in the possession of the local the local natives, the local population. Ktsirchem Omar Rachman of Alo Ktsir Nochri. It has to be the harvest of your grains, not the Gentiles' harvest. So that if you have grains that developed and were harvested in the possession of the natives, that wouldn't be suitable for us to use in the first place. The Gemara continues, Mimai de Akrivu, who says they offered an Omer to begin with. Dilma lo Akrivu, maybe there was no Omer offering at that point when they first entered the land. The Gemara says, Lo, Salkadait, of that you can't suggest. Dichtiv, Vayochlu, Me Avur Haoretz, Mimochros HaPesach. The Pasuk says they ate from the avur. Avur are the grains of the land right after the first day of Pesach. On the second day of Pesach, Tezai Nisan, they ate from the new grains. Mimochas of Pesach, ochel me'akor, lo ochel. From here we can infer, on the 16th of Nisan, which is the day after the first day of Pesach, that's when they were able to eat. But before that, no. Di akrivu oimer v'hodar achli. They had to have offered the Omer on the 16th of Nisan, and then ate from the new grains, and that's what the Pasuk is describing. So, Meheichon Hikrivu, from where did they find grains to offer as the Omer offering? Omar Lohen. So, he answered them, this is Rav Kahana, answers the Chavraya, Kol Shelohevi Shlish Biyad Nochri, any grains that had not developed a third while in the possession and the ownership of the Gentile, even if the Gentile owned the grains at their initial development, but the Jews now moved in and took over the land, so it would be acceptable for the Omer. Ah, Vedilma Ayel Velo Kimlu, maybe the grains did develop a third in the possession of the natives, and the rabbis, the chachomim at that time, simply didn't know. They can't evaluate it. Ela, that's not an option. Ela kim lehu, they do know, and they were able to establish that the grains that they used on the 16th of Nisan of the year they entered the land were grains that had not developed even a third while in the possession of the natives. Hachanami, so too, regarding our issue of grains that are harvested, that, as we said before, that they are harvested on Sukkot, they definitely developed a third before Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara asks, V'dilma lo ayel klal. Maybe when the Jews entered the land, they sought out grains that had not grown at all in the possession of the Gentiles, and that is what they had used for the Omer. The Gemara answers, or actually the Gemara continues, Avol hecho de'ayol riva, but if the grains had developed a quarter in the possession of the natives, which is a little less than a third, bein shlish lepachos mishish lo kim lehu. As far as trying to distinguish between a quarter developed or a third developed, they wouldn't know. So the Gemara is raising a question on Rav Yirmiyah's proof. Rav Yirmiyah tried to prove that they do know by virtue of the fact that the grains that had developed less than a third in the possession of the natives were the grains used for the Omer. Who says that that's what they sought out? Maybe they sought out grains that had not developed at all in the possession of the Nochri. Rashi says, the Dilma lo ayel klal, bodku ad shematzu mitvua, ad shelo hischilo libo shel klal, umimenu heviu. Maybe they sought out, as soon as they entered the land, they started scavenging around for grain that hadn't ripened at all, hadn't developed at all. And that's what they earmarked for the Omer offering. The Gemara responds, Loi salka daitoch. To suggest that, you cannot say that. That they sought out grains that had not developed at all. And that's what they used that first year as their Omer offering. Dichtiv. Just think about the dates. Think about the time factor. It says in the Pasuk, Va'am arlu min hayardain, ve'osu l'chodesh. The nation of Israel emerged from crossing the Jordan River into the land of Israel on the 10th of the month. That's the 10th of Nisan. V'i salka daitach d'lo ayel klal. If you were to think that they sought out grains that hadn't developed at all, and it was as soon as they entered the land, they sought out grains that hadn't developed at all. B'chamisha yoimi mikom alyo, in 5 days, is it going to go from that level of underdevelopment to being ripe and ready for the Omer offering? The Omer offering is brought from ripe, fresh, ripe grains. Elomai. So then what are you saying? The Ayol Riva Odanka, that the grains that they used were grains that were less than a third developed. Riva is a quarter, Danko is a sixth. That they were only a quarter or a sixth developed. That's what they used. Akati b'chamisha yoimi mi ko malya. The same question can be asked. Within 5 days, can grains go from being merely a sixth or even a quarter developed to being full? Could that be? Elomai yisloch lemeimar. What are you going to say? You who wanted to adopt that approach, that kimlu l'rabbonan, and they knew to choose something that was specifically less than a third. How are you going to explain, according on your terms, going from a quarter development or a sixth development to in 5 days to being completely ripe? What are you going to have to say? Eretz Tzvi Ksivba. You're going to have to say, well, in describing the land of Israel, it's described as the land of the Tzvi. Tzvi is a deer. A deer is a very swift animal. Eretz Yisrael is described, the land of Israel is described as a land that is swift. It's swift in ripening its produce. Well, once you come on to that analysis, Hachinami, I can tell you, like I suggested, that the grains hadn't developed at all. And if you'll ask, if they hadn't developed, how in 5 days could it go from that level to fully ripe? I will tell you, Eretz Tzvi, Ksivba. It's the land of Israel is considered like the land of the deer, a swift ripening land. So if you are following the give and take structure of this section within the brackets, we saw Rav Yirmiyah with his change of mind that you definitely have to say Kimluhu L'Rabbanan, and that's how they were, according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, able to offer the Omer offering from grains that specifically had not reached a third development. And then following that, you saw a give and take. Who says that that's what happened? And at the end of the day, the Gemara leaves you off saying maybe they found grains that haven't developed at all. But when it comes to being able to distinguish between a quarter developed and a third developed, showing that the Chachamim are sensitive and aware of precision, there's no evidence of that from here. So that's what we said earlier, that it was a little ironic that Rabbi Yirmiyah, who originally spoke about he voiced his skepticism about Kim L'Rabbanan, the Gemara at the end of this discussion is actually coming back to, if Rabbi Yirmiyah is trying to prove his reversal in accepting it, not so quickly. Maskif lo Rabbi Chanina. Now here, you see, structurally, without the brackets and without all of our introduction, the structure would be a little bit hard to follow because and if you're following our volcano markings, we left off with essentially a question. But the question we left off there, four lines above where you have the straight up, the upright volcano shape, which indicates a question, that was essentially a question on Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah, who had decided to accept Kimluhu L'Rabbanan. Here we have again an upright triangle. See, you might think, well, what about the give and take? The reason for this upright triangle is because it's a question back on Rav Asi that appeared before the brackets. And in fact, you can see that at Rav Asi's response had been two lines from the top where you had an inverted volcano shape. And here we have an upright volcano shape, hence a question back on that which was said above, before the brackets. Maskif lo Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina questions Rav Asi. Rav Asi made his point, interpreting the pasuk three lines from the top of V'chag Ha'osif. The word Osif could not mean cannot be a name of Sukkos, but rather it's a reference to one who harvests, kutsir, one who harvests something at the time of Sukkos. Well, Rabbi Chanina brings that into question. Umin motzis amris dahai osif kutsir hu. Can you really say that the word osif, and use your arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text and align it with the arrow above? Can you really say that osif is an extra word, and hence it can't mean the holiday of collection or at collection of grain of produce time, but rather it means harvesting. V'hoksiv, the pasuk says, be'os b'cha, this very same pasuk that we this is a different pasuk, be'os b'cha migarnecho miyikvecha. The Omar Mar, Bepsoles Goren Viekev, Hakosuv Medaber. This posuk is dealing with, for our purposes, the material that you use for covering the sukkah, the material that you use as schach. The material that's suitable for schach is the residue, let's say, the refuse parts of a granary, that which you throw out, the psoles of a goren and yekef, which in fact is the stalks, the grain stalks, or the twigs of grapevines, that is material that's suitable for schach. But now the real explanation is found in the Rashi. So we start with the Rashi, second to last narrow line. Mi motzis amris, Rav Chanino's question to Rav Asi is, can you really say dahai osif kotzir, the ko amris, that you said dahai osif yaseira, that the word osif was extra, lemidrashe loshin kotzir, to explain it, to actually change its meaning from the simple meaning of gathering to meaning kotzir, harvesting. The Hoksiv, Rashi goes on, the Alma, elsewhere it says, Be'osbechomi garnechomi yikvecha. The Omamar, and it's explained regarding that posuk, in the posuk that's from Dvorim Perek Tezayin, Shelimdecho akosuv lasu schach shel sukkah, the posuk is telling me to make the schach that covers the sukkah, b'psoilis goren v'yekev, the residual material from a granary and a winery. Kagon, koshin, uzmoros, as is the case with regard to koshin, are stalks, and uzmoros are branches. Davar she'ein mekabel tumah v'gidulo minoretz. And this is material that has these two necessary characteristics for being koshin v'schach, something that's not mekabel tumah, and it grows forth from the land. V'hai chag ha'osif nami deko amris yaseirahu, that you, Rav Asi, said that the word osif was extra. And why did you say it was extra? Mishum dichtiv gabi, it's because it's written in the same posuk, it says ba'os b'cho es ma'asecha. So that if the posuk is referring to chag ha'osif, that sukkis is at the time, is the holiday at the time of harvesting, well, it already says that in the pasuk. It says ba'os b'chos ma'asecha. Then that's what led you to think that the chag ha'osif was an extra expression. Well, I have news for you. Lav yaseirahu. It's not extra. Elozehu shem ha'chag. That chag ha'osif is the name of the holiday. An alternate name for the holiday of Sukkot. Al Shem, why is it called Chag HaOsif? Al Shem Shasukah Mesucheches Bepsoilus Gurin VeYekev. As we said, based on the pasuk in Dvorim Perek Tezvov, Beos Bechomigornecho Mikvecha is a pasuk telling me what's kosher for schach, and the sukkah is the mainstay of the holiday of Sukkot. So you see the word ba'os b'cha and the word ha'asif, they're one and the same, and hence the holiday of Sukkot gets that name. It's the holiday of ha'asif. It's the holiday that you use the psoilis garen v'yekev for covering those sukkah booths. Ve'havele k'man d'kosav, that which the Torah writes v'chag ha'osif, it's as if it writes v'chag ha'sukos b'tzeis hashana b'os b'cho ma'asecha. The chag ha'sukos at the end of it's at the end of a year that just concluded, as you are ingathering your produce, bisman she'odom oisef el habayis tvua shebesodos. So chag ha'osif, the word osif is an alternate name, yes, for the holiday of Sukkot, not because of that it's the time of ingathering. That aspect is highlighted by the term be'os b'cho ma'asecha. So why is the word chag ha'osif used? Because the word ha'osif reminds me or is associated with be'os b'cho migornecho mi'ikvecho, which is a pasuk that describes the material that is kosher for schach. So chag ha'osif is chag ha'sukos. Well, with that amazing question, we then lose our original source that one third of grain development establishes, or I should say the year in which the one-third grain develops in place, establishes its miser status. Amar Reb Yirmiyah, Hal Milsa Havoy B'Yodon. We thought we had it. We thought we had it in our hands, namely that we have a source for tevua and its miser identity being established by one third development. The also Rabbi Chanina Shoda Bei Narga, and Rabbi Chanina came along and threw an axe into it. Rashi, three lines from the bottom. The also Rabbi Chanina Veshoda Bei Narga Lomar Dahai Osif. Shapir mishtama belishna dekrova lav yesera hu. That Chaga Osif is meaningful as it is in the pasuk without changing its meaning. Lishna dekro, leaving the pasuk as it is, not saying that Osif means kotsir, and it's not extra as was thought earlier. Well, okay, Elamin Olon. So then the obvious question is, so where do you know that a third development of grain is that which determines what miser you will remove from it? And in other words, once again, the timing of the one-third development establishes the year of miser for it. So we answer, Kedesanya. This is you see the inverted volcano. This is now a response. And we have the bow tie because this represents the second source the Gemara presents. The Brisa says, Rabbi Yonason ben Yosef Oymer v'osos es hatvua l'sholosh ashonim. This pasuk is describing the miracle of after having observed the rules of Shemitah, and we had the rules of Yovel, where you wouldn't be allowed to till the land and have produce growing. What would you be able to eat from? So the Torah says, don't worry, the land will miraculously provide food. However, we're going to darshan the pasuk al tikri l'shalosh. Don't read the pasuk as that the land will produce enough food for 3 years. Elo l'shlish. That means that tevua is considered made, is considered ready, so to speak, as far as tithing is concerned, when it develops a shlish, one third. The Gemara asks, v'ha meboya le legufei. But don't I need the pasuk for itself to tell me what are they going to eat? After the Shemitah year, what food will be there, be available to eat? So the Gemara answers, that isn't a question. For as far as a response to the people's question of what will we have to eat, Kosiv Kro Achrino, there's another pasuk, and it says, Uzratem Es Hashona Hashminis, you will plant in the eighth year. The eighth year means the first year of the new sabbatical cycle. Ve'achalte min atvua yoshan, and you will have enough old grain to eat ad hashana hachias, until the ninth year. So that the grains, the harvest of the sixth year, produced enough food for the sixth year, for the seventh year, for the eighth year, and as far as the ninth year is concerned, then you'll eat that which you planted in the eighth year, the beginning of the new agricultural cycle. So as we come to the end of this sugya, the Gemara has given us a source that in order to establish the year that the grain harvest is associated with, you look at when did the grain develop a third. And the year in which it developed a third, even though the actual harvest of the grain might be at the next year, the cutoff point, as we've said in the past, Rosh Hashanah, even though the grain might be harvested after Rosh Hashanah, which might already be a miser on a year, but since the grain developed prior to that a third, so it takes on the miser Shani status in an example when you're going from year 2 into year 3. And the opposite would be the case if you're going from year 3, which is a Maaser Oni year, into a Maaser Sheni year. Before we continue in the Gemara, you of course see a slash indicating that that which follows is a new discussion. On the side, under the Nosei, the topic heading, we've written the following. Oirez, Doichen v'chulei, we're going to see a source that mentions different types of vegetation. Minim, Shonim, different types of kitnios. The Gemara will tell us, shal kitnios. Shekvias, Shnosam, the establishing of what year they are, legabi trumas and maisers, tolui b'hashrosha, is dependent on when they take root. This is a new standard of establishing what year something is associated with. Till now we've seen other standards for other kinds of items. We've seen at the point something is lekitos, harvested, at the point something develops a third. We've seen here we're talking about when they take root. The Gemara Tanan Hosam Ha'oirez Va'doichen Va'pargin Va'shumshimin. These are different types of kitnios, different types of legumes. She'eshrishu Lifnei Rosh Hashanah, that took root before Rosh Hashanah. Misasrin L'Sha'avar, they will be tithed according to the previous year. Umutorin B'Shvias, and if you were talking about a case of passage from year 6 into year 7, since they took root before the Shemitah year, they are considered sixth year produce. The imlav, if they didn't take root before Rosh Hashanah, then asurin b'shvias, as far as Shemitah is concerned, they will be forbidden to be used as common produce, but rather will have shvias restrictions. For example, you wouldn't be able to conduct commerce with them, just like with regard to all other Shemitah produce. Umis asrin l'shana haba. And as far as the tithe is concerned, if it wasn't a Shemitah year, the tithe would be based on the current year and not the previous year, because here we're talking, here it's a case where they took root after Rosh Hashanah. Omar Rabba. Rabba now analyzes, or he looks, he surveys the whole issue of tithing. Amur Rabbanon, the Rabbanon have said, Ilon Basar Chanot, in order to establish fruit, what year they are associated with, you look at the time of blossoming. Tavua v'zeisim basar shlish, grains and olives, their meiser identity is based on basar shlish, at what point did they develop one third, the year in which they reached the one third mark. It's according to that year you will tithe the tavua and zeisim. Yerek basar lekita, vegetables, they are based on the time that you cut them, that you harvest them. Honey, the orez and dochen, the legumes mentioned above, the kitnios that we mentioned above, kitnios are the legumes we mentioned above. Keman shavinu rabbanon, what are they patterned after? In other words, it's you're making up a new category for kitnios. Why is that? Hodar Omar Rabba. Then Rabba continued, and he said, "Mitoch shasuyin parchin parchin azli rabbonon basar hashrosha." Since legumes are not harvested in one shot at one point in time, but asuyin parchin parchin, the word parchin is a somewhat borrowed expression. Parchin is found in Maseches Beitza, and Rashi quotes the Gemara where people would roll certain types of legumes between their fingers, crack open the shells. You have this, like a case of peas where they come in a pod and you crush the pod and take out the contents. That's what parchin means. in our context, the legumes are harvested, but not at one time. A little today, a little tomorrow, a little next week, a little next month, and they accumulate. The legumes then get accumulated. But as far as establishing a one date based on their harvest, that would be impossible. Some are harvested before Rosh Hashanah, some are harvested after Rosh Hashanah. I'll have a pile of grains where you've got last year's stuff mixed in together with this year's stuff. That would be the case if I established legume or kithios tithing based on the harvesting. So what did the Rabbanan come up with? Instead of basing it on harvesting, which would lead to a mix-up of the old stuff with the new stuff, and we've said already a few times in the past that besides the confusion in determining what Miser year it is, you'll also have a problem of the old mixed with the new, and we have a rule that you can't tithe last year's produce in order to exempt this year's produce, and vice versa as well. So since harvesting as a means of determining the Miser identity of legumes is out of the question because of the parchin element. They're not harvested at one time, but a little bit today and a little bit tomorrow. Or in other words, some before Rosh Hashanah, some after Rosh Hashanah. Asli Rabbonon Boser Hashrosha. The Rabbonon go according to the time that they took root. In reality, their practice was, the practice described here is they were all planted basically at the same time. As far as when people decided to harvest them, that was at different times. So since the hashrosha means the rooting, the taking root, was done at one time, all of the legumes were planted at basically one time, so then it's easy to identify what year they are associated with, whether it's a Miser Sheni year, which is the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the seven-year cycle, or it's a Miser Oni year. Just find out when they took root. Abaye enters with a question, a long question, and we have decided to add a topic heading at this point because the sugya is a little bit involved. So to make things a little easier, we offer an introduction and we write no say, and of course this is a hemshech, a continuation. Me'achar, we've written on the side of the Gemara, Me'achar sherabo hisbir hatam de azlinon boser hashrosha bekitnios. After Rabbo explained why the Rabbanan chose to base the Miser year on the rooting time of the kitnios, mishum dezeh hazman hayochid shel achidut. This is the only time of uniformity, of togetherness regarding all of the legumes. Abaye makshe. Rabaye raises a question. Lomo lo lezel basur lekita. Why not follow, in fact, the harvest time? And you'll ask, well, some are harvested before Rosh Hashanah, some are harvested after Rosh Hashanah. And rely on bila. Bila means mixing up. Mix them up. So that you might have had some of last year's grain that is legumes. Last year's legumes that you harvested before Rosh Hashanah and some of this year's legumes that you harvested after Rosh Hashanah. Mix them all up in a thorough mixture. And then when you draw from something that's been thoroughly mixed, we, based on this idea of uniformity, you will be extracting in your tithe an accurate representative amount of that which you harvested before Rosh Hashanah, and an accurate representative amount of that which you harvested after Rosh Hashanah. So that in that 10% that you are harvesting, you'll have the required representation of that which is from the previous year and that which is from the new year. And as a result of that, so then you're not going to be falling into the problem of exempting last year's stuff with this year's stuff, or this year's stuff with last year's stuff. This suggestion of uniform mixture and the tithe that you take then will have a representative amount of last year's produce and a representative amount of this year's produce in it is certainly a solution for the problem of Chodosh and Yoshan, where we were afraid otherwise of having last year's produce being used to exempt this year's produce or vice versa. So that problem is solved by what we call Bila. Bila is this uniform mixture. The Tosfos in Dibur Masav Yitzpur Gornel Socho deals with the issue that superficially this method would not help for the mixture of a second year kitnios legumes with third year kitnios, because those 2 years, the transition from second year to third year represents a change in the type of miser. So one tithing would then still have the problem of having miser sheni and miser oni mixed in there. There might be a solution to that as well, but that's beyond the purview of our discussion. But as far as the issue of chodosh and yoshan is concerned, last year's stuff and this year's stuff, why wouldn't this be a solution? So that even if the whole reason of going based on Hashrosha and not based on Likita was because of this problem, there's another way to solve it. And that is Bila. Amarle, we continue now in the Gemara. Amarle Abaye. Abaye says to Rabba, the Yitzpor Gornoi Lusoichoi, why not pile up your Gorono, your granary, but it's the harvest of legumes that you mentioned before that you harvested a little bit last year and a little bit this year. Pile them all together. V'nimtza toreim min ha-chodosh shebo al ha-chodosh shebo min ha-yoshan sheboi al ha-yoshan shebo. Because you pile them and mix them all together, when you tithe, the 10% that you're taking as your tithe will have the representative amount of last year's stuff to exempt last year's harvest, and a representative of this year's stuff to exempt this year's harvest. And you don't have a situation of last year's produce is coming to exempt this year's produce, because you have a representative of both in the tithe that you're taking from the mixed pile of legumes. Milo Tanya, and don't we have a source that condones this? Rabbi Yosi ben Kippur Oimer Mishum Rabbi Shimon Shazuri. Pul Hamitzri, a type of legume, Shezaroi Lizera, that was planted for its seed value. When you're dealing with this plant, Pul Hamitzri, some people planted it benefit from the seeds of this plant. Some plant it for the leafy vegetation of the plant. What's called the yerek. So pul hamitzri shezaroi lezera. Now, when something is planted for zera purposes, we go boser hashrosha. We go according to the rooting. So miktsaso hishrish lefnei rosh hashanah, miktsaso hishrish leachar rosh hashanah. If some took root before Rosh Hashanah, some took root after Rosh Hashanah, ein tormin u'ma'asrin mizeh alzeh. One cannot tithe the truma and meiser tithe of the pre-Rosh Hashanah produce to exempt the post-Rosh Hashanah produce. Lefi shein tormin u'ma'asrin lo min ha-chodosh al ha-yoshan v'lo min ha-yoshan al ha-chodosh. One does not exempt the old using the new. Ketzaruosis, so what should he do? Here again, we're talking about this plant, Pul HaMitzri. that some of it took place before, some of it rooted before Rosh Hashanah, and some took root after Rosh Hashanah. What do you do? Ketzer oset sover garnu l'soichai. He piles them all together, and then takes out of the mixed pile a tithe. V'nimtza toreim u'ma'aser min ha'chodesh sheboi ala chodesh sheboi, u'min ha'yoshen shebo ala yoshen shebo. Since it's a uniform mixture, within the tithe that you extract, you have the representative amount of tithe to cover the previous year's stuff, and a representative amount of this year's stuff in the tithe to cover this year's produce. So this is Abaye's question to Rabbah. Why is it so pressing to establish the legume year based on taking root? If it's because if you were going to based on the time you harvested, you're going to have old mixed together with new, that's no problem. Even if you have old mixed together with new, if you make it into a uniform mixture, the tithe that you take will be acceptable. Amarle, Reb Shimon Shizuri. Amarle, that is. Amarle is Rabba says to Abaye. Rabbi Shimon Shizuri ko Amris. Are you citing as a question on what I said, Reb Shimon Shizuri? Reb Shimon Shizuri sovar yesh bila. He is of the opinion that you can rely on uniform mixing. The Rabbanon savri ein bila. The Rabbanon disagree, and they say that there is no, when you mix something, you're not going to get a uniform mixture. Well, if you're not going to get a uniform mixture, then you can't take one tithe from mixed grain, mixed legumes, some of this year and some of last year, because you might be getting a disproportionate amount of one year in the tithe, and that will in effect be used to exempt the other year's produce, and that's out of bounds. So what is the solution? So this is what Rabba's telling him. The only solution is to base the legume year association with the time that it took root. At when they all, since they're all planted, and they all take root at the same time. So then the identity is established at the time of their taking root. Then the tithe that you take from them will be uniform. Omar Reb Yitzchok Bar Nachmeni, Omar Shmuel. Now we start a semi-new discussion. Notice there are triangles, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, we indicate Gimel Halachas Shel Shmuel, three Halachas of Shmuel that will appear here. HaGemara Be'omid Habo Omeres Utsricha. The Gemara on the Yudalit Amar Av will say, I need all three of these halachas. So Rav Yitzchok Bar Nachmeni quotes Shmuel, who says, Halacha k'Reb Yosi ben Kippur she'omar mishum Reb Shimon Shizuri. The halacha follows him. That, what does that mean for us? That it's possible to mafrish from all of the legumes together, and the thinking right now is because we're relying on Bila. So the scenario that Reb Shimon Shizuri had described was some of the legumes rooting before Rosh Hashanah, some taking root after Rosh Hashanah. So you have this scenario that we were dealing with before, some of the previous year, some of the current year, and taking one tithe from all of them will be effective, and you don't have the problem of one year's legumes coming to exempt another year's legumes because you are relying on Bila. So the thinking right now is that Shmuel accepts Reb Shimon Shizuri lock, stock, and barrel, meaning that you can mafrish from all of them together because you're relying on Bila. Maskiflo Rabbi Zero, mi Omar Shmuel Hochi. Rabbi Zero challenges and says, would Shmuel have said that? For ho Omar Shmuel, la kol ein bila chutz miayin v'shemen. regarding all kinds of substances, there is no uniform mixture. You can't claim uniformity in the mixture, with the exception of wine and oil. Liquids, there is a concept of uniform mixture. But regarding everything else, there is no bila, including the kidneys. So how can you say that this same Shmuel accepts Reb Shimon Shazuri? This then is Rabbi Zeira's question. The Gemara responds, Rabbi Zeira overlooked something. Ishtamitze. Ishtamitze means it escaped from him. Ha di Omar Shmuel. A third teaching of Shmuel. It is true that Shmuel, like Reb Shimon Shazuri, enables one to mafresh from all of them together. However, not based on the reason of Reb Shimon Shazuri. What was the scenario that Reb Shimon Shazuri was addressing? Some Pul HaMitzri, some that took root before Rosh Hashanah, and some that took root after Rosh Hashanah. Shmuel says, Hakol Holech Achar Gemar Pri. The Maisers are determined not by when they took root, but when they ripened, Gemar Pri, when they ripened. So that even though you have some having taken root before Rosh Hashanah and some having taken root after Rosh Hashanah, the time of their Gemar Pri, of their ripening, is all after Rosh Hashanah. So as far as Shmuel is concerned, he agrees in part with Reb Shimon Shazuri, but not for the same reason. He agrees with the practical outcome of Shimon Shazuri, that you can tithe those that rooted before Rosh Hashanah together with those that rooted after Rosh Hashanah, but not based on Rav Shimon Shazuri's reason. Rav Shimon Shazuri's reason was based on Bila. Shmuel is saying because the time of tithing is based on the Gemar Pri, and all of them are of the same year. Whether they took root before Rosh Hashanah or they took root after Rosh Hashanah, their Gemar Pri was at the same time, in the same year, the current year. And therefore, take one tithe, because there's only one, they're all considered chadash, they're all considered new current produce. And you don't have any problem of last year's stuff mixed together with this year's stuff that Bila was coming to solve. You don't have chadash and yashanir, it's all chadash, all current, all new. So we have in this small section of Gemara 3 points that Shmuel made. The Gemara now at the top of Yud Daled explains each one of these points of Shmuel had to be made. Utsricha. The I Ashmin and Halacha Kriv Shimon Shazuri, if the first point had been made by Shmuel that the halacha is like Shimon Shazuri, and we left things at that. Hava amino mishum lekosover yesh bila. I would have thought that Shmuel buys into it that there is bila. There is uniform mixture, including kidneys, not just wine and oil. Kamash malon. Therefore, I need halacha number two, lakoil ein bila, so as to remove any mistake thinking that Shmuel will say that there is Bila. The Iyashmina la calling Bila, we had just that teaching. Hava mina kerabonon svirole. I would have thought that Shmuel holds like the Rabbonon that you won't be able to mafrish from one pile of stuff that rooted before Rosh Hashanah together, stuff that rooted after Rosh Hashanah. That there is no solution of taking from one pile where they are mixed. Komash malon halacha kerb shim and shazuri. Therefore, it was necessary to teach halacha number one, that we follow Rosh Hashanah, which means that there is an option of tithing from the pile, from one tithe from the pile of the mixture, so to speak, of the stuff that took root before Rosh Hashanah, together with that that took root after Rosh Hashanah. Ve'i ashmin and hani tarti, and if we would leave you just with halacha number one and two, the two first triangles of Shmuel, havamino kashio de Shmuel ad Shmuel, I would think that then we have a contradiction in Shmuel. Meaning, on the one hand, if he paskins like Reb Shimon Shizuri, he's telling me that yesh bila. And if he paskins, and then in triangle number two, he's saying ain bila. Well, that would be contradictory. Therefore, kamash malon, hakol hoylech achar gemar pri. Therefore, in triangle number three, Shmuel reveals to us that the reason you're able to mafresh from the stuff that rooted before Rosh Hashanah together with the stuff that rooted after Rosh Hashanah, because you determine the identity year-wise of the legumes, of the kithios, based on the completion, the ripening of those plants. And therefore, the entire pile is chodosh. And when he said halacha k'rav shimon shizuri, he meant to say that halacha is like him, that you can tithe one tithe from both piles, so to speak, from both groups, those that took root before Rosh Hashanah together with those that took root after Rosh Hashanah, but not for his reason, not because of Bila, but because everything is chodesh, because we establish the identity of the year identity based on Gemar Pri. Ve'i ashmeina and hakol hoylech achar gemar pri. Had Shmuel taught just that, have amina, I would have thought afilu tavua v'zeisim nami, that hakol includes even grains and olives are established. Their year identity is established by the gemar pri, the time they become ripe. Komash malon. Therefore, it was important for him to say halacha. Rabbi Shimon Shizuri b'mai de polig, that we follow Rabbi Shimon Shizuri regarding the topic that he argues with the Rabbanan on, namely regarding kitness. It's then that we will follow Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. We take a look at the Rashi. Up the upper part of the narrow lines, b'mai de polig, b'minei kitnis omar Shmuel, regarding the legumes. Shmuel says the ma'arvin hanishroshin lifnei Rosh Hashanah b'nishroshin l'achar Rosh Hashanah v'yoyv taimo lemilse, and he explained mishul dehoichin bohen achar gemar pri, and Shmuel adds his reason that we go based on gemar pri avol tvuah v'zeisim, but regarding those. Vegetations, the grains and olives, which wasn't the subject of the machlokas of Shimon Shizur and the Rabbanan anyway, they are achar shlish. Their year identification is based on the year in which they developed one third. The Gemara asks, v'lishaminon hani tarti, why not teach these two points, namely that halacha is like Rav Shimon Shizuri, and hakol holech achar gemar pri. La kol ein bila lomali. What do I gain by Shmuel adding this information? By his saying that we go achar gemar pri, he is already telling me that it's because of that and not because of bilo, because bilo won't work. So what does that have to be told for? Ha komash malon. What Shmuel is accomplishing in triangle number two is not telling me about ein, the negative hakol ein bilo, but he's telling me the layayin v'shemen yesh bila, because in that triangle number two statement of Shmuel, we have this information as well, that Bila does work for Yayin and Shemen. If you have wine or oil, some of last year's mixed together with some of this year's, you can take one tithe and rely that in that one tithe you have a proportional representation of last year's wine in the tithe to exempt last year's wine harvest, and you have enough of this year's wine in the tithe that you took to exempt this year's wine harvest. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.